The Pulse of the Fraser on 107.7 Pulse FM with Dave Sheldon.
Good morning. Welcome back. If you've missed any of our interviews today, I have Mary Lois Jackson from the city of Delta in our last segment. I've got Miss Sonia Furstenau from the Green Party. We'll have her on momentarily. And in hour number three, we have, I want to make sure I get the name correct on this, Rachel Nelson from SFU. If you missed any of those conversations, we'll have them on our website later on today, probably afternoon or so, pulsefm.ca, pulsefm.ca. And then you just go to audio. You can find all of those interviews there. If you've missed anything here, you can listen to them to your heart's content, download them, make them all work for you. On the phone lines right now, our MLA from Cowichan Valley, she's a Green Party member, Sonia Furstenau, joins us. Good morning, Sonia. Welcome to the program.
Thanks so much. Happy to be here.
Happy to have you on the program today. And it's exciting to have the Green Party on once a week to talk about what's going on with your party. I know it's important for you to get your message out there, but it's important for people south of the Fraser to find out what it is the Green Party is trying to do as you're working your way forward now. As official party status, I was talking to Dr. Weaver last week, and he said that you guys have more committees to shake a stick at than you have sticks. It's a pretty busy time for you guys right now.
Yeah, it's pretty flat out. So we each sit on about five committees. You know, we've been assigned to them. They're not all up and running just yet, but there's a lot of committee work. And then we've divvied up all of the ministries between us. So we each have seven ministry critic files. And then in addition to that, there's specific things that we're working on. So I'm working on proportional representation in the referendum, for example. And Andrew works on the basic income pilot. And so there's a lot going on. And it's a very busy office. We've got incredible staff supporting us, but I refer to us as the small but mighty group.
Well, you could call yourself the Walking Dead too, because I mean, you guys spend all day up and all day. You know, I mean, I say it in jest. You know that, because I know that. You know what? It's busy enough when you have a party, like a full party, like whether it be the NDP or Liberals. There's always lots going on, but you guys are now official party status. That helped you at least get some more funding and some more people to help you and support. Correct.
Well, in fact, we as three independents, we had more funding than we do under the current rules with official party status. And so what we're just hoping is to keep the funding that we have as three independents, which means we get to keep our caucus staff, which is essential. And really the case for that is that, you know, we're working hard on behalf of our constituents and on behalf of all of BC in the role that we're playing, and to do our best job, we need the staff to support us.
Explain to me why proportional representation is so important to the Green Party, and why you believe it's important to the people of British Columbia.
Yeah, it's a really important one. It's been important to me for a long time, and I know it's been a nationwide conversation, because Trudeau had promised that we would move away from first past the post. So we start with what is the problem we're trying to solve. And the problem that we're trying to solve is that in a first past the post system, when you have more than two parties, as we do provincially and federally, what often happens is what's called a false majority. So typically in a provincial election, one party can get 39, 40% of the vote. It gives them a majority of seats in the legislature, and it gives them 100% of the power. So they don't have to work with anybody. For 4 years, a party with 39% of the vote can make every single decision, and that's it. They have absolute power. And I think that what that's done in BC is it's created this very partisan, adversarial approach to politics, where each party is really concerned with attacking the other party or defining itself as not the other party. So in a proportional representation system, the percentage of the vote is reflected in the number of seats in the legislature, and it creates a circumstance where as we have right now, where parties work together, and they work together in the best interest of the citizens, as opposed to what's happened under first past the post, which is parties work together in the best interest of their party.
Do you believe right now that parties are working within the best interest of the government right now, or was in the best interest of the province right now? When and I'm not here to Shanghai you or anything like that, mm-hmm. but I'm just saying, I agree with the fact that corporate and union donations had to get curtailed. I totally get that. But but the excuse about having to wean someone off of that financing by giving us a taxpayer subsidy for the next 5 years to the tune of $27 million. Now, from a Green Party point of view, you guys haven't been accepting union or corporate donations for the last little while, so I don't understand why the Green would have to wean themselves off anything, but they're getting that money regardless. It's a bit trifling to me when I see that that kind of decision's been made without conversation after we're told we're at least going to get committee on that. That, to me, doesn't work in the best interest of what's going on.
And you know, I taught history and studied history for a long time, and I was a high school teacher. And one of the things I would often say to my students is, perfect is the enemy of good. And so in politics, often what you see is efforts to do good, and they're not perfect, those efforts, in everybody's eyes. Nobody can be, no decision can be considered perfect by anybody. But as you said, the good that was achieved with the bill that brought electoral finance reform was the removal of tens of millions of dollars from our provincial elections coming in from corporations and unions. And I think yesterday's article in the Vancouver Sun about the, you know, the visit of former Premier Clark and former Trade Minister Theresa Watt to Hong Kong in the midst of a housing affordability crisis in BC, in which it seems the visit was about, you know, how do we make it, how do we make our landscape more appealing to you to come and invest in, when in fact we know that this is a significant problem for contributing to the affordability cost. So
that's fair enough, but you deflected off the question. and I appreciate the fact that you're putting me into a different lane, and we'll get to that lane in a second if you like. But you talked about compromise in the form of corporate and union donations. And I say to you that that could have been great legislation if you guys hadn't have put the corporate suck on there from us to grab that money and instead gone about it yourselves. Or at least, you know, this government has no problem going to committee, Sonia. Why would you not put it in committee? That was just a blanket, well, we need to have this money to wean ourselves off of things. That was the words that were used by David Eby. It just drove me nuts.
Yeah, and I can understand your frustration. On the other hand, there's a lot of evidence that it's good public policy to use some of this kind of per vote allowance, because what it means in some ways it also reflects voting intention. And so the per vote allowance means that each party gets a bit of money based on how many votes they get. So they get that would get funded according to votes. So it's also a way, you know, particularly what we have, and it was a standard practice in Canada. It was removed under the Harper government federally. And so it had always been in place until a few years ago in Canada. And it provides, you know, some funding, particularly typically for smaller parties, but to be able to see some of their support translated into something, as opposed to, you know, you don't get elected in a single riding. That's it. You walk away. And so there is evidence that this is actually good policy for strengthening democracy.
Should parties be penalized for not being able to properly fundraise? And that's kind of the argument I have, right? I mean, here, you know, we all know the Liberals can fundraise. We all know the NDP can fundraise. You guys have chosen to fundraise a different way, but that's just the way it is. To me, what this is saying is that, hey, we're going to cut down corporate union donation. That's expected. But now we're saying as well that we're not going to have to worry about giving the Green Party donations, because they're getting based upon the votes they've got, a little bit of a stipend thanks to the people of British Columbia, because that's what you guys wanted to do. It looks like a handout to me. Mm-hmm. Would you guys refuse that money?
We haven't talked about refusing the money, but let's look at it in a different way. So if we, you know, with funds like that, one of the ways that we would use those funds is to invest in policy development. And I expect this is what other parties would do. I can only speak for us, but I know that this is a huge priority for us, is to look at how do we strengthen our policies so that we coming into election, I was really proud of our platforms and our policies coming into this election. We had a fully costed platform that was, it was the only platform that had footnotes. And it allowed us to come into this situation we're in with a balance of power with a lot of ideas to put on the table, a lot of actually fleshed out policy. And I think that if you look at it in this terms, okay, if parties can approach this kind of funding and look at how do we become more effective as parties, how do we become more effective if we're in government or in a minority situation, and use that money to ensure that we're creating the best possible policy based on good evidence, based on best practices, based on what's working in other jurisdictions. Then, you know, I would say that's a good use of money.
Right, but should we have to, as a government or as the people of British Columbia, have to pay for the growing pains of a political party? I mean, other parties, I mean, we saw what happened. The NDP got decimated in one election. So did the SOCREDs. They got killed. That brought forth the Liberal Party. And then you had a bit of a jog through that stretch. And these people built their way through things without having that kind of, political financing that's done by the people of BC. Do you not think that that's a bit more of us supporting you while you're trying to figure out your grassroots?
I mean, no, I would come back to, you know, the removal of what was a significant problem in our political system, which was the corporate and union donations and the kinds of influence that huge amount of money had on political decision-making in this province. You know, the removal of that and what the NDP brought in with their electoral finance reform was this, you know, decreasing amount of support for parties. And the evidence shows around public policy that this can be an effective way of getting away from the corporate and union donations.
Sure.
I get that people are frustrated with how that happened, and so again, you know, it was not an effective.
It could have been handled a lot better, Sonia. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. Here's the thing. If we had said, because here's the thing. Right now, the government, of course, you have help by being the balance of power in that. So you're part of the government of British Columbia right now. But the government of British Columbia has said to us, we're going to have a closer look at the Massey Bridge. We're going to have a closer look at Site C. But we're going to ram through this policy that's going to give us money. If they had said to us, let's hold off for 4 months on this one and at least put it to committee. And if the committee came back with that, I think that people could swallow the medicine if there is sugar on it. You know what I'm saying? Is that that's the case. Sonia First and I was our guest right now, by the way, Green Party MLA. And we'll do this once a week with a Green Party member, whether it be yourself, Mr. Olson, or Mr. Weaver. But I want to get back to proportional representation because I think it's important, especially with you being a product knowledge expert on this. I want to put forth the supposition to you that as much as you value what proportional representation might bring to our government or to our people of British Columbia, there are still people who will be enamored or happy enough with first past the post.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be open to a straight up yes, no, as opposed to being, I don't want this being shaded three ways to proportional representation. I want there to be, here's proportional representation, here's first past the post. These are your choices. Are you willing to have that go forward?
Well, at this point, the decision-making process for what the question on the ballot will be is going to be in the hands of the Attorney General's office. And
right.
He's doing this independently. We are going to put in a submission, basically, as everybody is able to put a public submission into the Attorney General's office before the referendum ballot question is created, and be able to put in their input. So what you're saying, should it be a simple question? Absolutely. I think it should be a simple question. And I think, you know, for us, that's going to be the core of our submission is, you know, we're looking at the values of democracy here. And we want to be very clear and very simple in the question that's being asked. Ultimately, it does end up being the decision of the Attorney General's office. But I expect, you know, given our conversations with a number of groups that are invested in seeing democratic reform, that's across the board is what we're hearing, is people want a simple, straightforward question. And I think ultimately a good, we have a year-long discussion ahead of us on the value of electoral reform. And as I pointed out, you know, I studied history. I studied the origins of Westminster parliamentary system, sure. Medieval England. We are in a medieval electoral system, right? A riding is how far a horse could go in one day, you know, how far you could travel by horse. Mm-hmm. And first past the post, again, it's like horses going past the post. We're in an electoral system that was designed when people used horses as modes of transportation. And I think we can acknowledge that it's in need of updating.
It hasn't hurt us, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think it's hurt us the way that people are perceiving it to be the way that it is. And I have no problem with democratic reform. I really don't. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure, and the reason why I want to have a healthy conversation about this, and I think that mm-hmm. that people who are proponents of electoral proportional representation like yourselves, I want you to give us all the details. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I need the proportional representation or democratic reform history of what's going on. I want to know how best it works for people of British mm-hmm. Columbia. And that's how I want to measure my decision. I don't need to measure myself mm-hmm. on what was. I need to measure myself on what will be. And that's where I'm at with this, right? So that's why it has to be as clear as possible.
Absolutely. And I think that's why the discussion is so important, because that's what you want, and other people may want other kinds of information. But I think at the one, when you say it hasn't hurt us, I would say that when 60% of the population, 60% of voters don't feel represented by the government that's been elected by 40% of voters, and the government that's been elected by 40% of voters says, we don't have to listen to the 60%. We've got our mandate. We've got 4 years. We're going to do whatever we want. I think that does hurt us. And then the other thing that it hurts us is by polarizing politics. And instead of finding our common values, our common ground, and there's a lot of that between all the parties in BC, there's some fundamental common values that we all work with. What first past the post and this kind of winner-take-all system does is it polarizes us, it pushes us into our corners, and it makes us define ourselves by our differences. And I think that does hurt not just democracy. I think it hurts the citizens of BC, because we end up also with these sort of swings. So one party gets in, it implements its policy, and then they get wiped out. The next party comes in, wipes out everything that's been done, and implements a whole new set of policies based on their ideology. We spend a lot of money, you know, kind of swinging back and forth. If we could be finding far more common ground and working far more on what is the best public policy for the province of BC, I think that would be a huge improvement over what we have.
If proportional representation gives me more than 58% of the voting public voting, then I'm more than willing to have the conversation, because right now mm-hmm. there is voter apathy in the province of BC. Now, whether it's because we mm-hmm. have voter fatigue from provincial, federal, municipal elections, that's one thing. But the biggest single problem I have with the whole process is that we have people like yourself, Green, NDP, Liberal, whoever it is, they go out there and stump for a month, and then 6 out of 10 people choose to vote, and 4 out of 10 people say it's not worth it. That, to me, mm-hmm. is the single biggest problem we have when it comes to our vote, especially given what we just went through with Remembrance Day this past week, and to remind ourselves how we even got to the mm-hmm. process of having this vote to begin with.
Yeah, and you know, the three Green ridings that were successful had some of the highest voter turnout in BC. And one of the things that in my campaign was really important was we ran a positive campaign. And so, you know, you saw the provincial campaign in May. It was, you know, the Liberals saying how bad the NDP are, the NDP saying how bad the Liberals are. And we really ran, I insisted with my campaign team, we ran a very positive, very kind of policy-based campaign, and we saw a 10% increase in voter turnout in Cowichan Valley. And I was really proud of that, that we achieved that, that people who had chosen not to come out to vote in previous elections did choose to come out to vote. And I think that again, so what I heard from people was, I was so relieved that it was a positive campaign. I was so relieved you were talking about ideas. And this is, again, what I think one of the things that electoral reform will bring us is we'll be able to focus on our own campaigns and to say what vision and what ideas are we presenting, as opposed to trying to convince voters not to vote for somebody else.
Last question for you, Sonia, before I let you go. Sonia Firsten now is our guest. She is the MLA for Cowichan Valley. And it's kind of on what you brought up. You talked about the fact the Liberals are putting down the NDP. The NDPs are putting down the Liberals. Yet you guys threw in with the NDP for balance of power, and I get that. But would you not have been, and this is the single biggest question I think that I get on my show, would you not have been in a more powerful position by being that group that was on the fence that held both parties to account? And maybe you're doing that now, or you believe you're doing that now, but if you had not been tied in with the NDP on supply and confidence, maybe you would have more power. Do you not think that?
Well, first of all, I don't think, power wasn't what was our motivating factor. And all three of us...
Well, power to change is what I'm trying to say, right? Is that, you have policies in place that I don't think... I'm not talking about absolute power, that kind of thing. I'm not talking about evil doer's power. I'm talking about the fact that the power to change is the single biggest thing in politics. There's no question about that. When you can change someone's mind or perspective on things or bring them to the table to have the conversation... then that's great. But I think that what was the choice here by your party was the fact that you went in with the NDP and said 16 years of the Liberals is enough, when you could have held both parties to the same standard had you have been on that fence looking on both sides. That's at least where I see it. So
To remain on the fence, though, would have been, then Christy Clark would have remained in her position as premier. So it's important that the perception of remaining on the fence for a huge number of people would be that we chose the Liberals, right? And I think that what it ultimately came down to was sitting down in those negotiations and finding out where the greatest amount of shared values were. And it became clear to us that those were with the NDP party. And ultimately, we ran as BC Greens. So we didn't run as Liberals and we didn't run as NDP. And it was a challenging and difficult time to have to be in that position to make the choice. But I think... ultimately, we made a choice that most closely reflected the greatest common values that we had. And I think the direction that we'd seen with the BC Liberals taking, and particularly, Andrew, the climate scientist, particularly on their direction around really not taking seriously our greatest challenge, which is to address the climate crisis and to move into a new economy that is not a fossil fuel-based economy. We didn't see, evidence that was the direction that the Liberals wanted to go. So that was a big factor.
Really appreciate the conversation today. It's been most informative. We'll do this again soon. And we have Green Party on here once a week. And whether it be you or Adam or Dr. Weaver, really enjoyed the conversation. Thank you today.
Thanks so much, Jay. Really enjoyed it too.
You bet. Thank you. That is Sonia Firsten-Au. Thank you. That's Sonia Firsten-Au from... the BC Green Party. She is the MLA with Cowichan Valley. We'll take a break. Come up. 8 o'clock news is next on Pulse FM.